Welcome back. I'm Gina Kaufman. Our next guest this morning joins us from Amethyst Place, where she provides practical guidance for women who have struggled with addiction and who are now in recovery. We're going to look at the moment when a person starts making too much money to qualify for assistance from her perspective. Julie Carmichael, welcome to Central Standard.
Thank you.
And just a note again for our listeners who missed it, Superintendent Stephen Green has helped to stabilize the Kansas City, Missouri school district over the past 3 years, but now he may be headed to Atlanta. Ellie Moxley will have more on what that means on Up to Date in about 15 minutes, so stay tuned for that. So, Julie, tell me about Amethyst Place and what you do there.
So Amethyst Place is supportive housing for women who are recovering from drug or alcohol addiction and their children. It's a campus of 38 apartments located between 27th and 28th and Troost. And the women are homeless, and they have 30 days clean time, and they live there with their children. And we provide lots of supports and programming for them.
Tell me about the programming that you personally are most directly involved in.
So that would be two things. It would be a mentoring program, a personal mentoring program called Encompass that's been around since 2008. We pair a mom with two mentors who are already friends with the mission to plant the seeds of a healthy relationship. A lot of these moms were introduced to drugs and prostitution as a child by their own parents, so they really don't have a lot of examples for that. The other companion program is called Sister Berta's 100 Jobs for 100 Moms, and we place moms, hopefully moms who are also in Encompass, in a supported employment job. We currently have 3 employees and 10 moms in that program, and we're always looking to expand both.
Our big question for the remainder of this hour is, what happens when you make just enough money to not qualify for certain kinds of assistance? Is that a problem you encounter a lot?
You know, we see that a lot. We are a campus of single moms raising 2 children. Usually most of them are under 7, so they've got a need for childcare in order to go back to work. And for low-income families, there are public benefits to support that.
To support childcare.
To support childcare and to support her going back to work. So there's housing benefits and food stamps and utility assistance and childcare. Childcare, of course, is the biggest support that's necessary. In Missouri, childcare runs between $23 and $44 a day for a family. So you can, when you calculate that out at a full-time job, that requires about half of a minimum wage just to pay for childcare. That's $4 of her hourly wage is going just to childcare. So there's childcare supports for her that are in place up to about $12 an hour working full-time.
What happens at like $12.50 an hour?
So at that point, it's what is called the cliff effect of public benefits. They just disappear. And she no longer has childcare. So in working with the moms with a interactive spreadsheet that we have developed based on a national program called Supported Employment, we've discovered many examples of moms where they really can't work a full-time job. Or they need to...
It would be more financially beneficial for them to have a part-time job?
In a way, because they cannot afford losing childcare. But then the problem they face at a part-time job, of course, is they don't have health care. In Missouri, if you're a family of 3, you make more than around $4,000 a year, you don't qualify for Medicaid.
How does this affect the way you counsel women? Because I'm looking at this benefits counseling form that you fill out, and you make some calculations that land with, you know, an answer to a question of, should I make this or that kind of change in my life? Can you walk me through this?
Yes. So this is an example of actual moms that I've worked with, and I put in a pre and post. So currently you're working this many hours at this wage and your employer has come and has offered you a dollar an hour increase. I end up saying things that in my head sound ridiculous because I often end up counseling these moms, you know what, you can't take that raise or you need to work less hours. more often than not, when I deliver that kind of news to a mom who's come to me and is excited about her job and wants to know what's going to happen to her food stamps and her housing and her child care.
And sees this probably as a reward for
yes,
hard work.
Yes, exactly. They cry. They will sit across from me and literally cry when I deliver that news. You know, I love the discussion of raising the minimum wage, and I think, you know, the private sector plays an important role in helping low-income families with their goal to move out of poverty. But it's worrisome to me because of the cliff effect of public benefits, especially in Missouri, where child care reimbursement rates are the lowest compared to any state across the nation. It just concerns me that we don't have that conversation going at the same time.
Can I stop you and just ask about this lowest in the nation thing? I'm looking at these charts, but they're from 2013. We are very, very near the bottom in 2013.
Yes.
But we have slipped since then below Ohio and Nebraska, which looked like they were kind of tagging behind us at that time.
Yes, they were tied. I think we have fallen below because a lot of states in the last few years have been addressing this issue. If you have as a public policy goal encouraging and supporting low-income families back to work, then you absolutely need to provide them the income supports that they need in order to do that. In Jackson County, for a mother and two children to live, it requires a living wage in Jackson County for that family is $22 an hour. So what that means is a single mother would have to work 3 full-time minimum wage jobs to survive without public benefits. So benefits provide an important safety net between minimum wage and a living wage. And if there is a cliff effect anywhere in between that, then we encourage moms in the wrong direction, basically. Work less hours, don't work at all in some instances. And, you know, those are actually the antithesis of what we're trying to do for these families.
Why does this gap between making enough to not get assistance, but not enough to make what you're calling a living wage exist? I mean, is it that different people have different calculations of what is a living wage?
No, a living wage is calculated at a county level by national organizations, and it's based on what it actually costs to live in Jackson County, Missouri. There's really no argument to what that is. You know, it's going to cost you this much a month in rent and this much on average in childcare, and there's many different national calculations of that. The issue is that I think the discussions are happening in silos. We talk about wages, and then we talk about public benefits, and we're not understanding the interactive nature of those two things, that we have a system in place that, in many respects, are setting our families up to persistent poverty. You don't ever want to encourage somebody to be on public benefits. Eventually, you want them to be in a place where they have moved beyond that. But the system itself is setting these moms up to have no other choice but to work less in order to not lose everything. If I were to offer you a $1 an hour wage increase, but tell you, Gina, here's $160 more dollars a month for you, but now you're going to have to pay $700 a month for childcare, you obviously would not take that.
You know, but that's interesting because we all do these little calculations about short term versus long term. And I understand that when you're at the poverty line, those calculations aren't necessarily an option. But the idea that, you know, this is a stepping stone to then $2 more and then possibly $2 more becomes the stepping stone to $3 more. Do you end up kicking out the stepping stones here?
So, you know, I think those are important. I think what I would like to see as a conversation is a comprehensive view of, so when the stepping stone happens, can we reduce by a certain percentage our public benefits? Right now, the cliff effect means it just disappears. It goes away. There's no gradual elimination of it. And, you know,
are there states that do it that way?
So other states actually have much higher limits in many respects for childcare. So, you know, we're in Missouri, it's like 120-ish percent of the federal poverty level. Other states will be 180, 200 percent.
So that means if you are X amount above the poverty line, that's when the benefits would start going away or go away altogether.
Right, exactly. And, you know, so Missouri has implemented some stair-stepping thing, but it hasn't been very comprehensive and it doesn't really impact a lot of families. And it doesn't still kind of do that protection all the way up to the point where she can do this on her own with just her wages. So that it's that bridge that is missing between the minimum wage and the living wage. That bridge disappears too quickly.
What do we know about how Kansas fares in this respect? I know that you are located in Missouri, but what do we know about Kansas?
Kansas is very similar. So I think Missouri's cliff effect happens around $25,000 a year. Kansas is around $29,000. So Kansas has very much the same issues. And there are national conversations going on about the cliff effect. Organizations that, interestingly, represent poor children. Because I think what we forget when we're talking about public benefits for child care, we are talking about children. And so the National Center for Child Poverty has used a grant from the Annie Casey Foundation to do this kind of review of many, many states. Missouri and Kansas is not part of that just yet, but you know, it's coming out with the same discussion over and over again. The cliff effect for poor families needs to be addressed.
It seems that there would have to be some kind of moment of cutoff when it comes to the state's involvement in supporting someone. And it sounds like part of your argument is that it shouldn't be a moment of cutoff that's abrupt, but that there could be a gradual shift away from assistance. But is it also a question of where that point ultimately should land?
Yeah, I mean, I think that when you look at our families, for instance, you know, if it costs X amount to live in Jackson County, they're making about a third of that from a minimum wage job. And then they're getting about a third of that from these types of public assistance, which is absolutely essential to support low-income families. There's nothing inherently wrong with the safety net unless it's set up to perpetuate poverty. And then the other third is coming from organizations like Amethyst Place and Operation Breakthrough and food pantries that deliver, you know, that assist them with childcare, that assist them with food for the day, that assist them with clothing. And what is happening is we're becoming more and more and more reliant upon nonprofits to make up that difference.
That's all the time we have for today's show. Julie Carmichael, with us from Amethyst Place, thanks so much for sharing your perspective.
Thanks for having me.
We'd like to explore other perspectives on this issue as well. Get in touch with us by emailing centralstandard@kcur.org if you have a story about minding the gap. To listen back to today's show, just head to kcur.org/centralstandard later today. That's kcur.org/centralstandard. Sign up for our podcast while you're there. That makes it super easy. If you want to talk to us off the air, Twitter is a great place to do it. We're at @KCURCST. Tomorrow, it's the 50-year anniversary of the Grateful Dead, and Central Standard is asking, where have all the deadheads gone? Tune in for that and be sure to call in with your stories. Central Standard is produced by Matthew Long Middleton and Sylvia Maria Gross. We had extra help today from Patrick Quick. I'm Gina Kaufman. Up to Date is right around that corner with the update on the Kansas City School Superintendent. Stay tuned.